Now, Lenny Henry returns with a second series of investigations into subjects that he, in common with many other people, doesn't quite get. This week, he relives some childhood horrors when he asks, what's so great about maths?
This is my idea of some sort of nightmare. I'm surrounded by a sea of maths teachers, but they're all so dead keen.
Good morning, everybody. I'm not going to lift the mic up. I hope I can use my good primary voice.
It's the start of a whole day of talk about maths, organised recently at the world-famous Institute of Education in London by someone who actually loves maths.
It's a lovely, lovely day. It's very varied. There are things for early years, there are things for middle.
She's a woman called Lynn McClure, and here I am, right in the middle of it all.
We're going to have another celebrity here, and that's Lenny Henry. Well, what's so great about maths? Who knows what it will lead to? Perhaps he'll retrain to be a primary maths.
You see, when I first started learning about maths, I just couldn't make any sense of it at all. It's not that my teachers were bad exactly. Mr. Parham was fine, in his own way, you know, all tweedy sports jackets and leather patches on jumpers and pipe tobacco. But I hated it. You know that feeling of sitting down to a set of maths questions and just not knowing where to begin? Well, that was me.
So that's Lenny. He didn't have a terribly good experience of mathematics.
They used to give us these boxes of sums to do. Addition, division, subtraction, multiplication, and I don't think I ever got through a whole box. Never. Hopeless. And you can imagine how that made me feel. I felt no good. I was no good, and I knew it. And unfortunately, that's how it's been for me ever since.
I've been in a room full of math teachers before, but you all seem to be quite jolly.
Math is fun.
Yeah.
It is. No, it's serious.
So you can imagine how I felt when I found myself at the Institute of Education, full of people like Mr. Parham. Well, not exactly like. There wasn't a single leather patch in sight, actually. But what I found rather comforting was that the organiser of today's conference, Lynn McClure, confessed that she'd had problems with maths at school as well. Hooray!
I remember being taught maths by an extremely sarcastic mathematician who I think was probably a bit of a misogynist as well. I never enjoyed the lessons. I didn't enjoy the lessons. I enjoyed the mathematics.
But you were good at maths.
I was good at maths.
All I remember is, and I've said this before, and this will probably keep recurring in this programme, is that I was given a box of sums to do, and it took me a really long time to work my way through it. It was very, very slow. So by the time I got to the end of that period of my life, I didn't have a basic landscape.
No.
And I'm still held under the waterline by that today.
Yeah.
And feel very inadequate, you know, and shamed about it.
And cross, perhaps.
And, yeah, it makes me very cross.
And as an intelligent person, everything else in your life, you're amazingly successful at it. And what is it about mathematics that isn't at the same level as the other thing?
But why do you think people dislike math so much?
Well, if you're asked to write an English essay for homework, you can take it home and you can write a really appalling English essay, but you can write something, OK? But if you're given a maths problem to take home and you can't start it, then you just cannot do anything. Mm. So I think a lot of mathematics is that children aren't taught how to get into things. They're not taught how to problem solve. They're taught to do procedures. And so, therefore, you can't even feel vaguely successful at something. Mm-hmm. Then it instills a sense of failure, and that becomes a reinforced sense of failure.
I was always frightened by maths because I couldn't do it. And what was worse, I think, was that I was very academic in every other area.
But maths.
But maths. Yeah. So I think my teachers just thought I was mucking about.
This is Vivian Parry. Today she's a leading science reporter and got a top class degree in science from London's University College, in spite of being hopeless at maths, just like me.
I remember standing, in fact, being told to stand in the corner, sobbing because I couldn't do a seven times table.
Yikes. Did your mates think you were stupid or something? Who could do maths? Did they deride you or did the teachers have a go at you?
No, the teachers had a go at me. But I think it was more than that. Mm. Not only I was ashamed of it, but I was... I mean, this has pursued me through my whole life. Mm. I thought I was stupid because I couldn't see what other people so plainly saw, and yet I didn't get it.
Somebody once said to me, oh, well, if you're good at maths, that's a true indication of your intelligence. And because I wasn't good at maths, I was immediately...
Exactly. I
just thought, well, I'm terrible at maths. That means I'm not... smart at all.
Exactly. That's exactly what I've always thought. I've always had this imposter syndrome throughout my life.
Talking to Vivian, It felt like coming home, like confessing shared sins or something.
OK, which is the odd shape out? Which is the odd one out? Triangle. Why is the triangle? Because it's got three sides. OK, everybody says the triangle because it's got three sides. I'm going to collect in a moment 12...
Back in the conference hall, the keynote speaker, Mike Askew, is addressing a rapt audience. He's professor of maths education at King's College in London and a bit of a guru amongst this crowd. He's got them playing number games with shapes projected on the screen, meet and drink to all these keeny teachers.
OK, let's see if we can get a dozen between us, so just call them out. No parallel signs. All the angles
so
are
what was it that went wrong with me? Was it simply that maths was badly taught when I was a kid? Over a lunchtime chicken drumstick at the conference, Mike gave me the lowdown.
People think, you know, it's all about learning your timetables. But as somebody once said, you know, 5 times 5 is always going to be 25. So once you've learned that, you've learned it. But how much more exciting it is to work on a problem that you don't know the answer to and to see where that goes. So what you need is to instill a joy of learning and a joy of learning maths in particular.
That so will they can improvise.
Yes, well, improvise, I think, is a really important word, Lenny, because it's one of the things I've been doing in my workshops. Take what the learners are offering and play with it and improvise with it and work with it. Mm. Some very rich maths can come out of that.
And you get children now who are incredibly confident.
Back to Lynn McClure.
In just messing about with number. I mean, I wonder whether you ever messed about with number.
No, I didn't have any of that. I mean, it's a sense of you've got to get it right.
And, of course, it's very important that you get the right answer to things because, I mean, if you're a doctor or whatever and you don't get your sums right, you could kill somebody. Yeah. So accuracy is very important. But there's also a sense that although there may be a right answer to quite a lot of things, there are quite a lot of mathematical things where there are lots of different answers.
There are variables.
Yes, there are. Very good, there are variables. But also, there are different ways of doing things. Mm-hmm. So if you asked somebody to take 34 and add 9, well, if you know about the structure of number, which you may never have had explained to you, then we use base 10. Everything that we do in number is to do with 10. So one way of adding 9 onto 28 is instead of adding 9 on, you add on 10 and then you take one off. Mm-hmm. And 28, add on 10, that would make it 38, and take one off, which would be 37. Now, you might come to that conclusion yourself, but if you're not, then somebody needs to help you to see all of these different strategies. Now,
here's Lynn again. This time at a seminar session with a small group of maths teachers from West London.
By a woman called Eleanor Nardi.
Lynn's in full flow in front of her flip chart, lamenting the way maths gets taught traditionally, like it was for me.
She came up with the acronym TIRED.
She's got a word for it. TIRED.
So I'm going to tell you what these words stand for.
In fact, TIRED's a mnemonic that's been dreamed up for the old dreary maths teaching we all know and, you know, hate.
The first characteristic was that maths was
tedious. T for tedious, I for isolationist, R for repetitive, E for elitist, and D for depersonalised. Or was that dull, or dreary, or depressing, or dreadful, or deadly?
Well, let's take tedious. This is to do with the teacher, surely.
This is to do with the teacher thinking one of the ways that you get people to be able to do something is you do the same thing over and over and over again.
If you'd said to me when I was 6 or whatever it is, Lenny, there's this thing called doubling, I probably would have done a flick-flack around the playground. I don't know what doubling
was. But there's hundreds of different ways of playing around with adding. There's hundreds of different ways of playing around with taking away. Mm. And millions of different ways that you can talk about multiplication and division. So why would you do it by just practising lots and lots and lots of sums?
Now, the idea about it being isolationist, what does that mean?
The pattern of mathematics teaching was that the teacher came in, demonstrated something at the board, and then everybody did their own thing in their own book. And you didn't talk about it, because if you talked to somebody else, it was cheating.
Yes.
So isolationist meant that it was one person struggling in their own little world and thinking that everybody else could do it and they're the only one who can't, whereas now what we have are classrooms where children talk about maths.
I actually wasn't very good at maths in primary or secondary school, to be honest.
In fact, even among some of the teachers involved in this project, maths had been a real turn-off when they'd been at school.
My problem was that I sunk into the background with numeracy and I literally just hoped I'd never get asked and just did the basics, never really did anything. And then got to secondary school and I basically went down and down and down and I just kind of scraped a C at GCSE and then just never did it again. I didn't really know my times tables. And I think I also, and I think this is a problem with a lot of children, I had a complete lack of self-confidence in my mathematical abilities, and I actually think I'm quite good at maths.
I think a lot of it is how you're introduced to it in the first place, and the early years are terribly important.
Yes, there's no mistake, it's Carol Vorderman, the woman who is to numbers on TV what Delia Smith is to food. She just eats them.
So I think if you have in your house somebody who's saying, oh, these numbers are good, here's a numbers game, oh, this is good, oh, aren't you clever doing that, you're encouraged naturally to do it. I think in Britain, well, I know in Britain, that there is very much a negative culture towards maths.
Yeah.
And so what often children will have at home is, oh, you don't want to be doing that. They'll hear it on the telly. You know, oh, that's a bad thing. Oh, no, that's boring. Maths is boring. That's, you hear it all of the time. Uh-huh. And that doesn't help. It's not something that you find necessarily in the rest of Europe or even in the States. It's something that is almost peculiar to Britain.
Yeah, you've commented on Britain's relatively poor performance in mathematics compared to other countries.
Yes.
What do you think should be done about it?
Well, you know, there's the area where you're talking about primary school maths. And then if you don't get that right, then you're building your maths mountain on pretty shaky foundations.
Yes.
So that's one area. But there's also the fact that you can give up maths here at the age of 16. And in most countries in the developed world, you can't do that. You have to take numbers or maths in some form or other to the age of 18 or even 19. And I would agree that that is a good thing. But the thing is about maths, particularly in the early years, it's about pattern recognition and it's about playing with numbers, constantly playing with numbers and constantly looking at the patterns. And with maths, it's very much not like English. You have to keep on building. You have to put one layer of bricks and then you have to build another layer of bricks. You can't go darting off everywhere.
One of the things that made me feel so bad at school was the shame of being bad at maths. The teachers went too fast, and I used to go home and look at a page of sums and not even know where to start, but then felt dreadful and guilty and stupid next day when all the others seemed to be able to do them. I felt so alone. Science journalist Vivian Parry.
You know, I'm always waiting for Mrs. Glass, my math teacher, to come and tap me on the shoulder and say, got you, Parry. You know, you've been masquerading all this time, think you're so clever, out the door, we know about you. And that's exactly it. It's so undermining of your whole being to be so bad at maths because you just feel so stupid.
I mean, we had streaming at my school, so there was 3x1 and 3x2, and I was in 3x2. And the 3x1 kids just had a natural facility with maths and calculations, and they just seemed to have wings and jetpacks and stuff, you know. They got all the free stuff that the teachers... Oh, I found some sweets in the... 3x1, you have those. And the ones that were crap at maths never got any treats at all. It just felt really...
Shaming for me was that I was in the top set for everything, but I was in the bottom of the bottom set and failed my maths O-level twice.
Yikes.
But that's what has always haunted me all my life, is that actually, although I've been very successful in other fields, actually I shouldn't be successful in other fields because really I'm stupid.
Yes.
Because if I could do maths, then I wouldn't be stupid.
Well, can I just ask before we go on, did you get GCSE maths?
Didn't get CSE. I don't even know what a CSE is.
Now, the thing about Vivian is that she got concerned about her problems with maths and took them along the corridor at University College to the professor of cognitive neuropsychology there.
PIN numbers?
He's called Brian Butterworth.
PIN numbers?
Okay. Well, we might do some tests later.
Oh, great. I'd love tests. Do I get to wear shorts?
And he spent decades studying the way the brain deals with mathematical concepts.
I'm afraid it's a number test, so you're probably not going to enjoy it very much. OK, well, we now know quite a lot about the parts of the brain that are involved in number processing and arithmetic.
Yes.
And it's part of something called the parietal lobe, which is just above your ears,
yes,
and connected up to the frontal lobe on the left. Okay, so one possible model is colour blindness,
yes,
and for some people, numbers are like that. It's that they see the number, just the way the colour blind person will see the traffic lights, mm-hmm, but they don't understand what the colours mean, what those visual stimuli mean, in the same way that somebody who is number blind sees the numbers but doesn't really know what they mean. So there's a condition called dyscalculia, which it is something you're born with, which means that you are bad at numbers. It's probably got to do with an abnormality in your parietal lobes. We've got some nice evidence for that now. And that makes it very difficult for you to learn arithmetic, rather like a dyslexia for numbers. And that means that you've got to have special kind of help if you're going to learn.
But you've had people with brain damage who have language difficulties or have no problem with numerical problems.
That's right,
isn't it?
Yeah, that's right. So there's this specialised bit of the brain. Mm-hmm. And if those are intact, you can have people with very severe language problems, problems in all sorts of other areas, like, you know, they can't remember, you know, simple facts like the capital of France, but they can still do calculations very well.
That's extraordinary.
But on the other hand, of course, if that bit's damaged and the language parts of the brain are okay, then they can speak and understand perfectly well, but the calculations that they used to be able to do, they can no longer do.
Vivian Parry was one of Brian Butterworth's guinea pigs, and you discovered that you're dyscalculic.
Yes.
Majorly.
Really quite substantially, yes.
I mean, how did you feel once you'd been through all the tests?
Yes!
You felt yes?
Yes, because I thought, actually, perhaps I'm not stupid.
Yeah. What does it mean to you being dyscalculic now?
What in practice it means is that I'm always slightly panicky.
Mm.
I was the worst bar lady in the world. I was asked to leave after about 3 weeks because I couldn't sort out the change.
Couldn't make change.
And I
could do that. I worked on Dudley Zoo behind the bar at the Trapper's Bar. I could just about make change.
Well, all these blokes thought I was giving them free drinks for a purpose and that I was, you know, kind of giving them the come on.
No, that's
and
bad.
Actually, it was because I couldn't do the change.
You're all right. Just have what you want.
So
I thought I needed to get checked out myself.
Dyscalculia.
Is it because my brain is the wrong shape? What is going on with all that?
Well, it might be the wrong
Maybe
shape.
All the problems I'd had with maths all my life weren't that I'd been badly taught.
You should do the test.
I think I should do the test. Or just couldn't do maths, but was something that I couldn't help.
So this is a test that's
not being bad at maths itself, but sort of number blind. Dyscalculic, in fact.
You're going to have to press keys.
So Brian sat me down in one of his testing rooms in front of a friendly talking computer, and off I went.
Hello. These activities will test your number skills.
The screen and the tinny voice kept giving me instructions and a set of arithmetical tests to do.
Now we're going to do some matching. In this exercise, you will see a group of spots.
It's a test of being able to enumerate quickly and understanding what a digit means.
Does this match the number?
Okay.
No, these do not match. So you should press a left. Well done. You have finished this activity.
Well, that was quite stressful because it's quite relentless and it's asking you to be quite quick.
Yeah.
And I could feel that old kind of weird feeling again. You know, because if you're sort of slightly maths phobic, you do get that stressful, sweaty, underwear stuck in the crack of your bottom feeling.
Now, we are going to check some sums.
Sum practice. This was certainly no way to convince me that maths is great.
This is the box.
Is this sum correct?
Yes.
Yes, this sum is correct.
Okay.
So you should press a right key. Press a right key.
So when was your appetite first whetted for mathematics? When did you really go, bling, I think, love this?
Well, I think I liked it ever since I can remember, which is, I suppose, a slightly tedious thing to say. But I've always liked it. But I've liked it in different ways.
Mm-hmm.
And I liked the patterns when I was younger.
Meanwhile, it was time to meet another person for whom maths has never presented the sort of horrors Brian's computer's causing me right now. She's called Celia Hoyles and runs the National Centre for Excellence in the Teaching of Mathematics. But once she was a czar, a maths czar, in charge of coordinating all the government's thinking on the subject.
And I liked doing well. I was pretty good at it.
Mm-hmm.
I'm very tenacious, and I think that's a bit of my particular personality, and I didn't like being defeated by it.
Did you never get that thing where you looked at a page of problems and went, oh, my God, what the hell is this?
Yes.
You had that?
Oh, I think everybody does. I would defy you to find anybody in your interview. You think, I have no idea where to begin with.
So can you sympathise with people like me, then, who I feel like I'm unclean or something? Unmathed.
I don't believe you, Lenny. I don't think you are unmathed. And I think what you need to do, and maybe this programme will exactly do it, is you need to find the key that will make you understand maths. It's all magic. There is a system. What's so wonderful about maths is there's a system behind it. There's a reason why these things work as they do.
Uh-huh.
And that's what you need. It's not just a load of tricks. It really is a system.
Maths gets very, very bad press in this country, doesn't it?
Yeah.
It's often seen to be okay to be bad at maths. I mean, why is that?
Do you know, I wish I knew, because it's only, it's something rather English. Mm. And it's something that when I was chief advisor, with all the maths teaching profession, we're trying to change. I think we have to change that perception that it's okay to say you're no good at maths. In fact, we should stop it. And it's people in the media, you, everybody say, look, I'm not proud of it. I'm going to really try and find the tricks and try and understand a little bit of this wonderful subject.
And one of the things that real mathematicians like about mathematics is its elegance.
Yes. Back to Lynn McClure.
So you'll find mathematicians having a conversation about a piece of mathematics which they actually describe as beautiful.
Well, I've heard that there are levels of mathematics where it becomes art, where it becomes beautiful, where it becomes akin to a dance, because you're being creative. But I put it to you, m'lady, that unless you've got the basic tenets up your sleeve,
absolutely,
you can't do anything.
Absolutely. And perhaps this resonates to playing Shakespearean roles, I don't know. But before you can be creative, the first thing is you have to be playful. You have to get a sense of what's possible. And then you have to have complete mastery. And when you've done that, then you can be creative. So if you believe in that and you want children to be creative in mathematics, you need to have lots and lots of playfulness, mm-hmm. using what you know and seeing it from lots of different sides, lots of different angles, visual, auditory, moving around the room.
OK. We're going to do a shuffle. Now, there are lots and lots of shuffles.
Everybody in the room is wearing a number, and the lecturer is playing games with them and organising them into number orders and playing games.
Okay. And I should say that what we're not advocating is that all maths should be fun. There is a time for serious work. So I would prefer, instead of using the word fun, I'd prefer to use the word engaging.
OK. First, the person from the back. Come and stand here, please. And then the person at the front.
The man making maths engaging here is a middle-aged guy who looks, well, just like a maths teacher, in fact, called Bob Vertes. He'd got all the delegates at Lynn's conference, and me, on their feet with numbers round their necks.
Pull out your sequence.
Six, one, five,
no,
two.
No, no, no.
Oh, six, one.
And we were playing games, standing in line and then changing the order. It all looked a bit daft, but in fact, Bob cleverly made this sort of ladies excuse me into a demonstration of a basic principle of mathematics.
But there comes a stage where if you're going to be a real high-class mathematician, you have to nail the stuff. You have to be really good at all of the knowledge bits.
Let's try it. Okay.
Does the one have to keep coming back with the torch? Does someone have to keep bringing the torch?
And then we were all off again. This time working out a maths game about crossing a ravine before a monster could get us.
I wonder what the ravine's over, because I'm sure some of us could go down.
All good fun, and based on some really good, simple maths. If Mr. Parham had been more like Bob Vertes, I think even I might have enjoyed maths when I was at school.
Although I want to make maths enjoyable, there still comes a point, as you'll know from your own work, when you've just got to put a bit of grit in.
Mike Askew again.
And it's not fun, but you work through that and the satisfaction comes at the end of it.
So there's always going to be that moment when you've got to do some work.
Yeah, right, so.
I suppose you can equate it with going to the next level on a computer game. If you learn these things and don't make these mistakes again, it allows you to play on the next level.
I think kids learning computer games is a really interesting analogy, because if you look at how most kids learn a computer game, they don't sit down and read the rule book. They dive in, and that's something I think we could do more of in maths. Yeah. You give them a problem, you dive in.
If you can access the determination that a child will have to complete all the levels of Call of Duty, then you'll have a maths student who can do anything.
And if you look at kids when they're displaying that tenacity, they're not kind of leaping up and down and whooping all the time. They are actually showing grit, and they're very focused. Yeah. We tend to think that we've got a generation who've got the attention span of a gnat. No, kids now have got huge attention spans when they're interested and engaged,
engaged.
In what they're doing. Yeah, yeah. And that's what we've got to bring to the maths. We've got to make it engaging. We've got to make it interesting.
Remember, is the sum correct?
I don't even think I got to the times box.
Meanwhile, back at Brian Butterworth's computer.
To start.
D6 is 12, yes. Four threes are 12. No. Oh, right, yes, oh. 4, 3 is 12, yes. 9 times 6, I don't know what that is.
You have now finished all of the exercises.
Please
call your teacher.
Sir. Oh, God, that was horrible. That was horrific.
Yeah, you...
That was Mr. Parham standing over me, emanating waves of tobacco. Just knowing that Henry wasn't the guiding light of his class wanted to hit me over the head with a giant polo mallet for not being able to do sums.
Oh, God.
You're quite fast. Your simple reaction time is quite fast. Addition, you're in the third stanine, so you're in the bottom, I don't know, 14%. multiplication, you're in the second stanine.
And that's not good. I can tell
and that's not good. No, that's seriously bad.
Well, I never learned about it. I don't think I completed multiplication.
So I would say this is for somebody with a BA honours and who's not 14 but older. This is not great.
No, it's not.
It's not.
But I knew that. I knew that before I sat down.
If you were a little bit worse, you would be dyscalculic.
Okay.
So it's age adjusted.
Vivian, are there things you could recommend to me to help me cope with my dyscalculia, which seems to be very intense?
That's a difficult question to answer because I suspect it's a bit like dyslexics in that it's a very individual problem in how you see things. Mm. I think one of the things is not to panic and not to tell yourself you're stupid. And also the other thing is to give yourself time.
And I think dyscalculia is probably where dyslexia was about 20 years ago,
yeah.
In that people knew that there was something not quite right, but they weren't prepared to actually acknowledge that there was a syndrome or whatever you want to call it. And I think Brian's work is definitely moving things on in that.
I'd been told that Celia Hoyles, the former math czar, might not be so persuaded of my dyscalculia, but I was in for a surprise.
I'm willing to entertain the idea that there is such a thing.
Are you?
Yes. But the trouble is, and don't get me wrong, Lenny, I think when you get to a certain age, it's all mixed up and then all this history of I'm no good comes in. So actually being able to say this is dyscalculic and this was not because of all your history is quite difficult to diagnose.
Yes.
But I think if
what about in little kids, though? What about kids who are at the beginning of their maths career, you know?
I think there might be some evidence that a small proportion is, but we need to be very clear what the size of that proportion is. Mm-hmm. And I think even more important, which I'm sure Professor Butterworth will be working on, is once you've been identified, supposing you were four, mm-hmm. and you said, yes, I really think this person is dyscalculic, so it's something in the way that their brain works, as far as I understand, we need to be able to make sure that there's something you can do after it.
Yes.
Otherwise, you will be the worst sort of student in any teacher's class.
And what you need is the playfulness bit, I would presume to say. I think if you could play around with numbers and start seeing connections with things, then you would realise that you can do this, and once you can do that, then you can do this, and it would build up, and your success would breed success. Yeah. I wish I'd taught you, Lenny.
I wish you'd taught me.
We would have had such fun.
And that goes for me too. If anyone could have made maths work for me, I know Lynn McClure could have. But then again, what was it that 7/8 make? No, 7/10 is 17. Take away 14. 69, 68. Oh, hang on, not enough fingers. Let me take off my socks and shoes.
What's So Great About Maths was presented by Lenny Henry. The producer was Simon Elms. Next week, Lenny takes on the challenge of one of modern literature's elusive giants when he asks, what's so great about Samuel Beckett?